You know, as we look around the world today, as Marilyn says, we see the world preparing for Christmas. Probably a different reason as to why we prepare and why we prepare for Christmas. But we also see, I don't know if you have, I've seen this occasionally, there's conflict, arguments, division, separation, feuds, wars, lying, deception, slandering, accusing, gossip. And that's just the church meetings. Sorry, the news is full of it. Social media is full of it. And unfortunately, not here, of course, because we're right. We're perfect, aren't we? But often churches are full of it as well, if we're really, really honest. Why? Because hearts are full of it. People are full of this stuff. And our natural response to the problems of the world that we see are to blame and to accuse others. We love to put people in boxes. We love to label them, to define them, to say that they're not us. They are them and we're this. They're the problem, we're the solution. And it's easy then to hate those people we label because, well, they're not in our box, are they? They're not like us. We're not like them. And that's what we do as humans. And then we decide that, well, if that person is the problem or that group is the problem or those people are the problem, then we just set about trying to eliminate the problem. We eliminate or want to eliminate those people, don't we? Now, of course, we don't go around actually doing that. No, we're far more civilized, aren't we? We just cancel them. We ignore them. We talk them down with ever-increasing passion while complaining about the fact that they're doing the same thing to us. They cancel us, or me, whatever my perspective is. And we're in this war with each other all the time. And of course, the problem's not me, is it? The problem's not my argument. The problem's not my side of the problem. It's always the other, isn't it? Doesn't matter which side you sit on. I'm right, you're wrong. My box is the good box, your box is the bad box. And so we just increasingly cancel and ignore and talk down, believing that if that peak group of people, those people would go away, the world would be wonderful, wouldn't it? The problem is, it doesn't actually get rid of the problem, because who's left? Well, you and people like you. And you know what I've observed in life is when you eliminate that group, you know, you either stay away from them or they have nothing to do or they hopefully might change, we just turn our focus onto other problems. Have you noticed that? How many of you like Australians? We'll stand with them, won't we? Oh, yeah. We'll stand with them, eh? When we watch a rugby game, when we're playing the Wallabies, we're like, isn't it wonderful that we get to play our friends? No? No, if anyone says to us, you know, you guys are just like Australians, what do we say? No way. But if someone comes in and wants to attack our part of the world or our, you know, then suddenly we're the same, aren't we? We join forces and we, you know what I mean? But as soon as things go quiet, we start. Australians and New Zealanders are different. We're in different boxes. And if that's all quiet, you know, we haven't lost the rugby or the cricket or something, or we have, you know, whatever, won it, well, then we start going, well, who likes Auckland? Who likes Southlanders? You know, we start dividing, don't we? And then if there's nothing really to complain about there, then who likes people in Wellington? Or even Lower Hutt? I mean, Lower Hutt, yeah, they're different, aren't they? We're Wainua Martians. And if we don't go there, well, maybe it's the neighbour down the road. Well, maybe it's your spouse. We're a people looking for problems to argue over, aren't we? And the problem is because it's in us. And we actually enjoy the thing we're commanded to walk away from, the thing we're commanded to change. And I observe so many people, even in the church, that believe the lie that if we eliminate a particular group of people, then life would be good, things could go well. But it never happens, because the problem is if we get rid of that, we just find another thing to go on with. In the church, we say this. You may have heard this. I'm not sure. Hopefully you've heard this. You need Jesus. Have you ever heard that before? Have you ever said it before? Okay. What do we mean when we say that? What is our understanding of what happens when people have Jesus, when he's believed and accepted? See, as I ponder this myself and I sit there and I think, you need Jesus. Well, is it you that needs Jesus? Or is it me that actually needs Jesus? See, sometimes when we say you need Jesus, we're pointing at the other box. We're looking at the people over there. We're looking at those that we have a problem with. But maybe it's actually us that need Jesus. Our mission statement up here on the wall, we exist to establish Wainui Mara as a Christ-centered community. We want to see Wainui Mara become a Christ-centered community, don't we? Yeah, we'd love to see that. What do we mean? What do we mean by that? Do we mean that everybody's going to go to church? Maybe. Does it mean that everybody reads their Bible every day? Does it mean that everyone is in a particular denomination? Our one, of course, not others, because, well, yeah. Does it mean that nobody has anything for themselves because everyone is sharing everything? Does it mean that we're going to have wonderful services, great songs, incredible messages, amazing prayer times, and everyone will just be flocking to the church because this is where it's happening? What does a Christ-centered community actually look like? I think it will include those things probably. But I actually think it's far more than that, and I think a lot of those things are the outflow of our need and our understanding that we need Jesus. And our passage today that Nikki read out, I think is an amazing insight into humanity. And if you've got your Bibles, I want you to open them to Matthew 9, verse 9. And just sit there. You can, you know, you're multi-talented. You can read and listen and hear from God and from me and from what the Word is saying all at the same time. I encourage you to bring your Bible. I don't care whether it's on an app or in paper form or whether you bring your scroll. I really don't care. I just think that what's important is that we're learning and we're discovering Jesus. This passage shows how humanity functions, and it shows what Jesus is about, and it shows what Jesus is teaching his followers to be about. Jesus in this moment is doing what Jesus does. He is spending time with lost and broken and hurting people. He is healing. He is restoring those far from God. If you go back to the previous chapter or the previous chapters, what's he been doing? He's healing the sick, driving out demons. He's dealing with the fear in his team about how bad things will go when there's a storm on the water. He's teaching those who will listen what the kingdom of God is all about. And of course, yeah, this is all happening. And now in this moment, it says he is walking along and he sees this man called Matthew and he calls him. And he says, follow me. Why has he chosen Matthew? Was Matthew looking interested in Jesus? Did he kind of perk up as he walked by? Or was he looking a bit lost and a bit down and a bit broken? Or maybe the Father told Jesus in his prayer time, maybe he just knew that he had to go, or maybe the Spirit prompted him to go to Matthew. The reality is we don't know. And I think that if we spend too much time trying to work out why Jesus called Matthew, it becomes unhelpful. Because do you know what we do? When we settle on a reason, we then make a formula out of it. We will write a book about it. We will create a study about it. We'll send it out there and hopefully get lots of money for it. And telling everyone, this is how ministry works. This is how ministry works. That's what we do, if we're honest. And I think the Bible is really helpfully vague sometimes, because I think God knows that we would take details that were not meant to be made formulas. He wants us to get involved in what is actually going on here. And when we have, this is just going to say, is that once we've got that formula, do we need God? Well, not really. We just follow the formula. We don't need that relationship. We don't need that walking with him. We don't need his prompting into, because we just follow the formula. The problem is, if you've ever tried it, it doesn't work for everyone, does it? You know, I did this last week and that person came to faith and I tried it with this person over here and they didn't. What's going on? Because life is not a formula. Walking with God is not a formula. It's a relationship. The fact is, Jesus called Matthew. And what I think is more important and more amazing to celebrate is Matthew responded. And it says he got up and he followed. Isn't that cool? Jesus is calling people to follow, to be his. He is calling you, he is calling me to follow. Before he's calling, if I dare say, them. You know, we tend to think us and them. You know, we're in those boxes again, aren't we? But God is calling you in the first instance to follow him. Before you start judging who else needs to follow, you need to. And we need to keep honest about that. And that confession we were talking about a couple of weeks ago, we need to sit there and realize we're on the journey. And we're not there to say we're better than them, because that's what brings division. We're there to go, we're not as good as Jesus. We fall short of what God expects of us. Me, I've got to sit there and go, you know what? I might think I'm better than you. I might think I'm doing better. But when I compare myself to Jesus, I've got a long way to go. And actually, I'm in the box of all humanity that falls far short of the glory of God and what we're created to do and be. Would that be fair? Do we like to put ourselves in the box with others that we don't like? Do we sit there and realize actually we're all sinners far from God and need his grace? Some might meet it a little bit more obvious than others, but actually we've all got broken hearts. We've all got things that need healing. And so the first thing is, right there, Jesus says, follow me. And what's our job? Our job is to get up and do it. Now, is Jesus just randomly walking around? You know, so when we hear follow me, what do we think? We think he's just wandering around the countryside, isn't it? Do you ever get this picture that Jesus has just got an ever-increasing collection of people just following him around? I don't know. I think like that sometimes. But I don't. Because that's not what's going on. Because look at what the very next line says. Now, it says, Matthew got up and followed him. And then while Jesus is having dinner at Matthew's house. How can he be following Jesus when Jesus is going to his house? So the following isn't about a literal get up and, well, I mean, it might be at times. But it's talking about follow me as your teacher, as your Lord. Follow my way. And how does that happen? Well, Jesus comes into your world. When you choose to follow, he comes in. He is present. And I love this picture. It just says that, well, Jesus is having dinner at Matthew's house, that Jesus is saying, let's do life together. Follow me. Let me in. Let me do life together. Let me spend time with you. Let me learn from you. You come and learn from me what life is about. And in this moment, in this particular passage, at this particular time in history, Jesus is sitting in Matthew's house having a meal. Now, this is my thing. I spend all day having coffees and just pondering these things. You know how it is. Is it just an ordinary meal? Is it breakfast, lunch, dinner, supper? Is it, I mean, I'm not sure what the Jewish routine is, but is it a party? Is it a special event? I don't know, but what it does say is that many tax collectors and sinners came and ate with him. Is that a cultural thing? Well, we're just having meals, so we're going to, I don't know. But here's what's important. Jesus was there, and somehow that was attractive. Jesus was in the life of Matthew, doing life with Matthew, and Matthew was learning to do life with Jesus. And guess what happens? His colleagues, his friends, his family start turning up. What's going on in Matthew is flowing over into the connections and the people that he does life with. And they're tuning out. Why? Because they want to learn as well. Are you following Jesus? Does your following look like this? You know, Matthew wasn't just out going to conferences and attending rallies and marching down the street complaining about the problems and then going back to his real life. He was doing life with Jesus. And Jesus came into his life, into his house, into his circle of friends. He came into his world, and people were being impacted simply because Matthew said, yes, I will follow. It's a life-changing, life-transforming reality. And I think it's just such an amazing image, this one or two lines right in the middle of Matthew here. It's like a snapshot of what it looks like when Jesus comes into your world. When we respond to the call to follow, Everything is influenced. Every part of our life, every relationship is impacted. Every person we come across has the chance to know something of Jesus as we walk with him, learning how to live real life. Do you understand that? Because you all look like stunned mullets right now. How many of you can say amen? That's what's happened to me. Well, how many of you are sitting and going, oh, really? But actually, this is what Jesus wants. It's not about you, just you. And I think in our Western mindset, we think it's just about us. But actually, life isn't like that, isn't it? We had a 50th last night, and we had to kind of limit numbers because what we've learned is Liz is an amazing person, and she connects, and she invites, and every time we get around, we're like, how come we know all these people? But it's just because we're doing life with Jesus, and our circles go bigger and bigger, and we connect, and we get to know people. And as we get through, we start having, some are just brief connections. Some might be in like the context of church. Some might be through work. Some might be friends from school that you've grown up with. Some might be just you're down at the local club, sewing club or something. You know, we build connections all the time. It might be that you just get the same person on the checkout at the supermarket and you start to build a bit of a connection there. We have connections all over the place. And Jesus and me should be impacting every one of those interactions. I don't mean you have to go out there and be a missionary like Paul. I'm just saying it should shape every conversation you have. Your heart should be turning and loving people, not just complaining about the person that cut you off, but wondering about why they were doing that. Why were they in a rush? Whatever. You don't realize this is all about, eh? Matthew is impacted. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we all lived like this? Wouldn't it be wonderful if the world was just full of people living like Jesus, impacting each other? We know it's not. Why? Because guess who comes along? And before we label the box, I'm going to do it for us. It's the religious people. Now, we might say they're Pharisees, because that's what the story says, but it's the religious people. It's the people that know it all. It's the experts. It's the ones that have it all sussed out. It's the ones that have got the formula without God involved. And they look at the situation through the lens of their rules, their worldview, and they come to the conclusion, Jesus is doing the wrong thing. All of this impacting, all of this changing that's going on, if you look back, all of the healings, the people being set free, the teaching that's going on, all of that stuff is sort of cast aside, and he's hanging out with sinners. And you just shouldn't do that. And before we get too excited at learning to hate the Pharisees, I think we've got to look in the mirror and go, you know what? We can be a lot like that, can't we? We can be people that look at a situation and go, you shouldn't do that. I mean, I grew up, you don't hang out with people like that. No, I don't think my parents intentionally taught me that, but I think growing up in our faith, you know, bad character corrupts good, bad company corrupts good character, things like that. And so we go, oh, I can't hang out with bad people. And yet here Jesus is saying, you're the light of the world. How do you go in and help people discover him? We have to think a bit deeper about what does that mean and how do we, you know, is our God actually greater than the world? Now, if you're going down the pub every night and getting drunk and joining them, you're being corrupted. But if you're going down, helping out and getting involved and people are coming to you and things are happening, then there's something else going on, isn't there? And I think we've got to be much more mature in how we look at our practices and the things that we say and do. Because in the church, we develop these rules and we develop these habits that actually isolate us and stop us being the light in those places. And we've got to grow up a lot more and think, how do we be God's people that he's calling us to be in our world? These Pharisees are so focused on their religious rules, and they idolize them. They literally worship these rules, but it's blinded them to the work that God is doing through his son. They see people healed right before their eyes and complain that he's doing it on the wrong day. He sets someone free from a disease and then complain that person shouldn't have been in the space at all. And it's hard to imagine, is it? But actually, we can be like that. I've seen it here sometimes. We might be praying for someone. It hasn't happened for a while. And there could be all sorts of nonsense going at the front. And people will be going, oh, that's not very appropriate. It's not very holy. because they're not looking at what's actually happening. Now, we don't want to pray for people and have them dancing and screaming just for the sake of it. No, that's nonsense. But if there's actually some real things going on and some demonic reality being changed and shifted, then shouldn't we welcome that? Shouldn't we encourage that? Shouldn't we pause ourselves to go, I wonder what's going on there. God, may you be at work. But often if we've not been there, we don't always understand it. And so we make a judgment and we downplay what God is actually doing. And these Pharisees have downplayed the healing, the freedom that's come for so many people because they're looking for a reason to discredit Jesus. Because Jesus is actually showing up the lack of their religious practice, the lack of their faith through their religious practice. Their religious practice brought a hardness, it brought a distance, it put them in a separate box and it kept them apart from the people they were supposed to be helping. And instead of rejoicing that a sinner is finding freedom, they, and often we, look for reasons why it is wrong. Well, that's my perspective anyway. And so then if you carry on in this short passage, the Pharisees come to the disciples and they say, why is your master spending time with sinners? Why is he eating with tax collectors? Now, I don't know if you've ever noticed it, because I haven't, but it just occurred to me this week. Is watch who the Pharisees talk to in any given situation. Do you remember what we were reading last week? No. Oh, you do? Pharisees, what were they doing? They came to Jesus, didn't they? And they said, Jesus, why are your disciples not washing their hands? What were they trying to do? Were they trying to make sure that Jesus had the right teaching, or were they actually trying to discredit him? Were they trying to make him feel bad because his disciples weren't doing the right thing? Were they trying to say, you're not as good as us because look at what your disciples are doing? I reckon that's actually what's going on, because this passage, they don't go to Jesus. Who do they go to? The disciples. And what do they say? Why is your teacher eating with the wrong person? What are they actually trying to do? Well, what they're trying to do is they're trying to sow questions. They're trying to sow doubts. They're trying to split the team. They're trying to sort of disrupt the team that Jesus is building. They're trying to get in there and upset what's going on. So they're not worried about going to Jesus on this. Actually, have you ever noticed that? Jesus is hanging out. Where are the disciples? Well, they're part of the mix, aren't they? Because they're learning, they're probably there. But they come along to the disciples and go, what? That's wrong. You know, a moment ago, you're the ones that are wrong, but now they're actually just sowing doubts. And this is what often we partner with the enemy. And instead of actually going, God, what are you doing? And how do we help each other do what God's about? We go in and we divide. And the church is full of division and has been for 2,000 years. The enemy is at work, and we've got to really grow up and be mature in that to understand that what God is doing and what the enemy is doing are two very different things, and sometimes we partner with the devil in very religious ways, and we don't even know it, and we've got to be so, so careful. These guys are manipulating people to divide, to sow discord and disunity so that they can have their way. And then look at what did the disciples do? Well, nothing in this particular passage. Maybe they were a bit like, oh, he's got a point. Maybe they're right. Have you ever had a question come at you and you're like, they've got robes on. They're esteemed in the church. Maybe they've got a point. And you don't know what to say. And I think the disciples are going, actually, we've grown up in this thing. We don't hang out with tax collectors. We don't hang out with some. Maybe Jesus is a bit off mark here. This is their journey of growing. And maybe they're sitting there going, we're actually not quite sure why. We know he is and we think it's good, but we haven't quite got our heads around it. And so Jesus notices this and he steps in. He comes over and he says to these Pharisees, look, it's not the healthy that need a doctor, but the sick. What a great answer. Why am I hanging out with tax collectors? Because it's the sick that need help. And so he simply answered their question. He's connecting and teaching those who are lost and broken. He's healing their brokenness. He's teaching life into their lostness. He's showing how life should be, because the Pharisees weren't doing that. So he's doing it. But then Jesus doesn't stop there. He's like this, isn't he? See, I don't know if we'd find Jesus particularly comfortable, because not only does he answer their question, he then says, then speaks into the real intent. He speaks to what they're really going on about. He's looking at their heart, and he goes and he speaks to the one behind the question. He says this: go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice. He quotes the prophet Hosea, which all of those Pharisees would have known by heart. Hosea 6 verse 6. These experts are so focused on doing the right thing that they miss what the right thing is. And all through the prophets, all through the Bible, the prophets call Israel, the experts, to repent of their hard-heartedness, not the world. God's not saying, hey, sort yourself out because they're going wrong. He's saying, sort yourself out because you're missing the point. You're going through the rituals. You're doing the practices that I've commanded you to do, and you're far from me. How the heck does that work? How do we do church life and miss Jesus? But the reality is it all happens too often, doesn't it? And we've all got to stop and have a look and think about who we are, where we're going, what are we doing here? And constantly keep ourselves and guard against comparing with others and go, how are we following Jesus? How do we compare to him? Is his character, is his Christ-likeness being showing up in my life? Are the people around me learning about who he is? Are they discovering something of him because they're hanging out with me? And I think we've got to learn to understand and do that a lot more. Sorry, I'm really speaking a lot more than I've written and I keep getting lost. The prophets constantly reveal God's anger at them, the religious people, Israel, the teachers, the priests, all of those for missing the point. And God basically says sacrifice is pointless if you're simply going through the motions of religious ritual. When you miss God and what he has for his people. God doesn't want a Christ-centered community because he wants everyone to turn up here for 2 hours on Sunday and go, yay, Jesus. It's not actually what he wants. When we come in and go, yay, Jesus, it should be because of what he is doing through the week. We should be so excited walking in here going, can I have the microphone? Can I share what Jesus did? Can I tell you? And if I don't have the microphone and I don't get to tell it in front of everyone, I'm going to be buying a coffee and telling someone over here in the cafe, and I'm going to go out to your place afterwards and guess what God is doing in my life this week. You know, we should be full of that, shouldn't we? We should be so focused on what Jesus is doing. But so often we come in here and what do? We complain about the government, the rugby team, the weather, or the wind yesterday. It's really hard to put up balloons in a tent in the wind. Do you know, I think I might go and pray to God about the wind. I was trying to have a party and I couldn't set up balloons because the wind. I don't think God really loves me because the balloons, they don't go out. So does that sound familiar? That shouldn't be what we're about, shouldn't it? You just go pop the balloons or keep them inside. Or don't have balloons because they're a health risk. I don't know. Just what's far more important is the fact that we're set free. We're no longer part of the world. We're no longer doomed to destruction. We actually have got life, and God is revealing it more and more. And not only is it growing in me, it's growing in those that I'm connecting with. And we're seeing people set free, coming to life, being saved, and getting a bit excited. Am I allowed to get excited? See, God desires mercy is what Jesus is saying. How many of you know about the prophet Hosea? Yeah? Hosea was called to marry a promiscuous woman as a visual reminder to Israel about God. And he was saying, this woman or his wife cheated on him, slept with other men, left the marriage, lived with other people. And Hosea was called to go and bring her back and to get into right relationship. Even though it wasn't Hosea's problem, he had every right to leave. But he wasn't doing it. He wasn't creating new rules. He was showing Israel what God is like with them. And he was saying, you're the promiscuous people. You're the adulterous people. You're the one that go off and worship other gods and engage with other gods. And I've called you to be about me, to be faithful, to be with me. And God mercifully comes after them again and again and again and again. And it's not like he's just overlooking sin and brokenness. No, 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 no. It's in his mercy. He goes, I want more than that for you. And this is what Jesus is confronting these guys with. He's not just giving them one line. He's pointing them to all of their history that they would know. And I don't know if you guys have read the Bible, but I encourage you to read the Bible if nothing else, so you get an understanding of what Jesus is about. And don't just read the Bible because you have to. Read it to discover the God that it reveals. Read to discover his heart for people, for lostness, for lost people, that he hates sin for sure. He wants to destroy sin for sure. But in the midst of that, he wants to bring mercy and grace and hope to lost people. See, mercy brings hope to broken people. Did you know that? Mercy shows God's goodness to those who don't have a hope. Mercy reveals the heart of God by majoring on a desire for a relationship over the wrongs that damage that relationship. Sin damages people. Would you agree? Have you ever noticed it? That people that live a sinful lifestyle, there's not much about them that you really want to do and be? Yeah. When God calls you out, he's generally calling you out for the stuff that you actually hate anyway. Now, some of our practices, we step into it sinfully, but it's because we believe it to be better than it really is. And we blind ourselves to go, it hadn't worked last time, so I'll do it again. Didn't work that time, I'll do it again. We'll do it again. Because we have this belief that somehow if we keep doing it right, it will work. And God's going, have you not figured out it's the wrong way? We need to look differently. How do you figure that out? Hang around people that understand it. Jesus is a good person to start with. Because he doesn't damage relationship, he builds. He might expose something, but he reveals God. Jesus reveals God's mercy and his desire for restoration, for reconciliation. And he teaches his people to come alongside those who are wanting to be free from their brokenness and are willing to be led by wholeness and righteousness. Jesus showed this constantly. In fact, the very first verse in this passage, I think, shows it really, really clearly. Jesus saw Matthew, went, follow me. Did he know Matthew was going to follow him? I think it's an irrelevant question. He offered. Matthew accepted. And his life was changed. If people don't accept, it's not your problem. That's theirs. That's their free will. It's their freedom to choose or not choose. Our job is to put Jesus before people, to invite them to follow him. Or maybe to follow you as you follow Jesus. Invite them to come with you on the journey. See, Jesus spent time with sinners who responded to the call to follow. What's he doing? Well, he's rebuilding trust. He's building intimacy. He's building understanding. He's listening to their stories. He's hearing their pain. He's hearing the reality of what's going on for them. He's not just coming in and going, you're all wrong, change. He understands the human heart is far more complicated than just right and wrong. Now, we need to not lose sight of right and wrong. But it's a lot more complicated, isn't it? Because wrong does a lot of damage, but right does a lot of healing. And sometimes it takes time to heal damaged hearts and damaged lives. 2 weeks ago, if you were here, I read the Baptist Union apology for the wrongs done in faith-based care under the Baptist Union umbrella. Now, an apology is a great step on a journey of healing and restoration, but when people are abused, it damages far more than just one moment in time. It's not like it happened then, we dealt with that, let's move on and carry on. No, it stays with you. It changes you. It damages deeply. It affects the person to their very core. And Jesus, in this passage, I think, shows us that we're to come alongside and journey with broken people through the pain, through the scars, through the brokenness, and in time healing comes. In time healing does its work. In time people are set free. It takes time. It takes trust. It takes meals together and talking together. It takes hanging out in spaces that aren't always comfortable. It means listening and caring and learning to understand the trauma and the damage that has occurred, even if you don't understand it. If I don't understand it, I need to learn to try and understand it. To go on that journey to understand it. And it can be difficult. And it can mean, and it means we have to seek to understand the past. And we have to understand that particular person's journey. And it's not just all about, sometimes it's there, they contribute to it. As I said, humanity is complicated. And it can be really, really challenging, but we have to do it. And when we walk with people in difficulty, listening to what has happened in the past with patience, gentleness, kindness and love, people begin to hope. They begin to hope that maybe this isn't there forever. They begin to believe that this doesn't have to define them. They begin to believe that actually there's far more ahead in Jesus than just the pain and the suffering that they're experiencing in the now. And this is what we call mercy. When you have mercy, people begin to hope. Just as Jesus dying on the cross for our sin brought hope to the world, as he paid the price for our injustice and our sin, in that he brought hope for an incredible future with him for all eternity for those who would believe. And if we are on that journey with Christ, our lives should mimic and imitate who he is, what he has done. And the reality of what he did on the cross was played out in these stories and should be played out in our stories as we journey. And you might be someone who's broken and hurting, but that's okay. God's healing you, helping you, making you whole, and encouraging you to walk with others. Don't wait until it's all fixed. I don't see anyone here that's got it all fixed yet. Oh good, no one walked out, that's good. Because the reality is we're all on the journey, aren't we? None of us are perfect, none of us have got, we've all got marks and scars and pains and difficulties. We're all on the journey, but actually it's in the journeying. It's in the learning to love where it's not deserved. It's in the learning to walk with each other when people frustrate us or we don't understand. It's in that that God is most at work, changing hearts and bringing about his kingdom. But one thing I've learned is that the Pharisaical mindset is not always from someone else. I have found that in my own life, the Pharisaical mindset isn't Pastor so-and-so or Father so-and-so. It's actually within me. It's my beliefs that I've held for a long time. It's the things that I've grown up with or things I've come to hold on to. I was just reminded this morning that when I had my stroke 10 years ago, and I had this thing, we went to hospital, what the heck's going on? After 6 hours, because they're just understaffed and everything, they came out and said, you've had a stroke. They gave me the formal diagnosis. And you know what my first thought was? What did I do? Where was my sin? Why has this come upon me? And I was shocked because I was like, I thought like that. But as I journeyed through that time, obviously physically healing all that, I've reflected on it over the last 10 years and I realized that it's exactly how I thought for other people, but not for me. But when something happened to me, that thought couldn't help itself and it came out. And thankfully it was exposed and I went on a quite an incredible journey. And God changed me and he changed my heart because I realized that I had to change, not just for me, but for those that I'm pastoring, those that I'm coming alongside, those that I'm doing life with. And I had to learn to follow Jesus' words. God desires mercy, not sacrifice. We're not called to live just all these rituals and stuff. If it doesn't change your heart, if it makes you no different to the world out there, you are no different to the people out there. You're just a sanitized version of it. So can I be really blunt and say, go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice. How do you learn mercy? Has anyone got any ideas? Practice it. Practice it. You've been reading my notes. It's the only way. Practice it. If you don't know, talk to someone. Come alongside someone that you see. And get in. Do it. Change the way that you approach situations. Put it into practice. It's hard. It's difficult. You've got to override your natural desire to hate other people. How many of you love to hate? How many of you hate the fact that you hate other people? It's more, we're in church. To be honest, we love to hate certain people. We hold on to that hate. We go, even God hates them, so therefore I'm justified in hating them. And we have these things in our minds, we have these very religious things that go on, and we've got to learn to put it aside. We've got to allow Jesus to come in, expose it and deal with it, so that we can be the people that he is creating, the church he is building to bring about his kingdom in our world. Now, it doesn't mean that you put all the churchy stuff aside. Jesus still attended the Sabbath attended the synagogue every Sabbath. He taught there regularly. He still observed the feasts, the Jewish feasts, the practices of prayer and Passover. He did all of that Jewish stuff, but he allowed mercy to reign in his heart. The very fact that he said to the Pharisees, go and learn what this means, because he could see that's what they hadn't learned. But Jesus had learned, as a man, he had learned that mercy has to reign, because that's what the Father desires. And instead of hating the Pharisees here, it's easy to think he hates the Pharisees. No, he loves them, and he's strongly telling them to discover what he is already practicing, and to discover a soft heart that seeks the truth in all situations, doesn't just stand off and go, you shouldn't be doing that. Come in and go, why are you doing that? How can I help you discover why that's not good? It's so easy to sit back and throw stones, isn't it? And so for us today, as I finish up here, as we learn to confess our sin, as I shared a few weeks ago, as we learn to stand there and go, Lord, I fall short, rather than, hey, I'm better than them. If we learn to go, where do I fall short? Help me in that. As we learn to live in truth about our own state of right standing with God, we also need to learn to have mercy with those around us. Just as we would have mercy or want people to understand our journey, we need to make the effort to understand other people. When we look at the brokenness and lostness that dominates, we need to look at the brokenness and lostness that dominates the darkness of our world, but we need to look at it with love and compassion, as if we were there ourselves. Would we want someone just to come in and tell us how wrong we are? Or would we want someone to come alongside and help us to journey from that place into the fullness of what Jesus has? See, our world needs hope, not judgment. Mercy brings hope to the hopeless. It is how we shine in the darkness. We are called to be the light of the world as Jesus' followers. As we bring mercy, that's what Jesus does in us and through us. So today, Jesus is not going to turn up to your table physically. That would be cool though, wouldn't it? But he's not, like in this story, he's not physically there. But he is present. Do you know how he's present? As you obey his command. As you put into practice what he told his followers to do. He is there with you. As you do what he did, he is right in the midst of it. As you're learning to follow his ways, he is there by his Spirit guiding you, teaching you, being present in that. He is with you as you step into the others, into their very real world, listen to their very real stories, and seek to understand their very real pain. Jesus is right there with you. In fact, it's because of him that you do it. He changes our heart to get a softness and an understanding for others. And every person around you will be drawn to learn more, to come and spend time with Jesus in you. If you're walking with one people, you find some conversations start to come off those. Has anybody experienced that? Yeah. And that's God's plan. It's not to change governments. It's not to fix that group or this group. It's actually to change you to be his presence wherever you go. Now, it doesn't mean we don't confront wrong. I'm not saying that. I think we have to look very carefully about how we go about doing that, making sure we're actually representing Jesus in the fullness of his glory. And when we approach others with mercy and grace and a deep love for those far from God, people are attracted, people are drawn, and ultimately, people are changed. I'm not a big one for tradition, and I know some people don't always like this, but I'm learning that tradition's not bad in and of itself. I rebel against tradition because there's some people that tradition trumps everything, and I hate that. Tradition should help point us to the one who saved. I love what was read this morning. The hope of Jesus is what our world needs. Let's be merciful, eh? Mark, can we finish up with that song? I love that song, His Presence. His Presence. That's what's in this story. It's His Presence that is making a difference. It's His Presence in the midst of the pain, in the midst of the sinners and the brokenness. It's his presence that makes a difference. And so as we just stand, as we close off, we stand and we're just going to worship. We always want to be available for prayer. Whether you come up the front, I don't really mind. It's easier if you come up because I know you want prayer. But we're a people of prayer. We're a people of Jesus. And so invite someone around you to pray with you if you want. but step into it. And if somebody has asked you to pray and they share something, be gracious and merciful. Stop to listen. Resist the urge to just judge and cut off and hold away, or resist the urge to say, I can't do anything. Listen. Seek to understand and then pray God's blessing on that person.